I will be reading from Exodus 3, 1 through 15. Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led his flock beyond the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of the bush. He looked and the bush was blazing, yet it was not consumed. Then Moses said, I must turn aside and look at this great sight and see why the bush has not burned up. When the Lord saw that he had turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, Moses, Moses. And he said, Here I am. Then he said, Come no closer, remove the sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground. He said further, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. Then the Lord said, I have observed the misery of my people who are in Egypt. I have heard their cry on account of their taskmasters. Indeed, I know their suffering, and I have come down to deliver them from the Egyptians and to bring them up out of the land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the country of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. The cry of the Israelites has now come to me. I have also seen how the Egyptians oppress them. So come, I will send you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? He said, I will be with you, and this shall be the sign for you that it is I who sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall worship God on this mountain. But Moses said to God, If I come to the Israelites and say to them, The God of your ancestors has sent me to you, and they ask, What is his name? What shall I say to them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. He said further, Thus you shall say to the Israelites, I am has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, Thus you shall say to the Israelites, The Lord of the God of your ancestors, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and this is my title for all generations.
However you picture the beginning of this world of ours, whether your first instinct is to invoke the words, let there be light, or Big Bang, or both, everybody's in agreement about one thing. This world began with a flash of light. In the beginning, God said, let there be light. And there was light burning in the midst of nothing else. At the start of everything, there was a light burning as the very first sign of God's desire for us. And before long, or after some time, depending on how you like to describe it, there was a person living under this light, and then another person, and a couple more people, and some more people, and eventually a family that allowed themselves to be known as God's family. Abraham and Sarah chose to live in this light. The family had its ups and downs, but it lived in this eternally burning light. And living in the glow of this light, this family grew. Isaac and Rebekah lived in the glow of this light. Then Jacob, Leah, and Rachel. Eventually, a heroic man named Joseph reflected this light so brilliantly, maybe sometimes somewhat arrogantly, that his brothers could barely stand to look at it. And so the family's future wavered with sibling rivalry. But living as they were in God's light, the family was eventually reconciled, and the family moved to the land of Egypt, where they really started to flourish. Before long, it was not just one family living in God's light, but an entire people. God's people living in God's light. But then things took a sudden and tragic turn. God's people were enslaved. God's people seemed to have become Pharaoh's people. To God's people, now Pharaoh's people, God's light seemed to have been snuffed out. Amidst the chaos, a man named Moses was born among God's people. Unlike the rest of God's people, he grew up with power and privilege, but like the rest of God's people, he too was just Pharaoh's property. And eventually Moses lashed out against an Egyptian and ran for his life, hiding in a dry and desolate land. And there in that dry and desolate land, he came across the strangest thing. A fire, a light, burning inside a bush in the middle of all that nothingness. Moses was drawn to this light, to this immortal and eternal fire that burned without ever burning up, and he drew close to it. And in the light of that fire, he heard nothing less than the voice of God. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. I have seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers. I care about their suffering. I have come to rescue them and to bring them to beautiful and abundant homes of their own. Go back to your people and bring them out of slavery. Bring them to where they may once again see my light and live as my people should live. Tell them that it is me, their God, who sent you. But the people hadn't seen God's light in a long time. And so Moses said, if I tell them that the God of my ancestors has sent me, that won't be enough for them. They don't know who you are. What am I supposed to say when they ask me about that? And God said, just tell them, I am who I am. I am what I am. I will be what I will be. Which is to say, I am the eternal, immortal, and ancient one, the only one, the light that has burned from the very beginning and the light that will burn forever, and I am calling you back into this light. You are my people. This light burns with desire for you. Come. And so Moses returned to his people. And after wrestling them free from Pharaoh's clutches, they all staggered out into the desert, where they followed an ancient fire deeper and deeper into the wilderness, and eventually even into their promised land. Truly, God has met God's people in many ways throughout history, and God is described in many images, both ancient and modern, and one of those ways that God has met us, and one of those images that describes God is this: that God is an ancient fire. A fire that burned from the beginning with desire for us to be created. A fire in a bush that can demand our attention when we've run away to hide. A fire that can lead us out of slavery and into freedom. A fire that gives us hope and guidance through seasons in the wilderness. A fire that tells us that God is with us even on the darkest night. Fire that, as Melissa Flor Bixler puts it in Fire by Night, Finding God in the Pages of the Old Testament, a fire that sets us ablaze in awe and fear, wonder and hope. And as we stand here today, holding this ancient story, wondering if we can still know how to live as God's people, wondering if this ancient story has anything to tell us about how to live as God's people, we may discover that we're not so unlike the people we find in this story. Because like God's people in Egypt, we also struggle again with being held captive by the environment we live in. We struggle against that which would like to own us. We struggle in a culture that wants to enslave us to wealth and material success. We struggle with entertainment. Entertainment we can even carry around in our pocket that has been created to hold us captive to it. We struggle in a culture that wants to enslave us to ourselves, telling us that the ultimate goal in life is to free ourselves from the burden of all other people and just find some pure version of ourselves. We struggle in a culture that wants to enslave us to nationalism. We struggle in a culture that wants to enslave us to political allegiances. We struggle in a culture that wants to enslave us to lifestyles that destroy God's creation and isolate us from one another and sever us from God. And although this type of captivity may feel a little different than the crack of an Egyptian whip on a back, it eventually leaves us nothing less than lonely, unfulfilled, anxious, and scared. And yet, like Moses, we are here today because something has drawn us here. Because God has drawn us here. Which is to say that in a world screaming for you to give yourself to whatever's newest, loudest, fastest, most pleasurable, you still choose to look for an ancient fire. You still choose to try to follow the ancient fire that burned before anything else was created, burning with a desire for all that was to come, including each and every one of us. You still choose to try to follow the ancient fire that, when everything seemed lost, burned brightly before Moses and said, "Rejoin your people. I am here to set you all free." You still choose to try to follow the ancient fire that then led those Israelites into the desert and to the promised land. You still choose to try to follow the ancient fire that met the Israelites on the darkest days. You still choose to try to follow the ancient fire that would later appear again above the heads of the first Christians, announcing the truth about God's grace and love for all of us. You still choose to open God's story and see what sparks might flutter off of its pages, to see an ancient fire lighting the way, ablaze in awe and fear, wonder and hope. All of which is also to say that just as God's people long, long ago, at some of the earliest moments of God's story, followed a God who often met them in light and fire, you're here today because you're following a call to live as God's people. I think this is a wonderful, incredible, blessed thing. So much so that this year, I invite us into an entire year of exploring what it means to be God's people. Over the course of this year, this will mean learning in worship about what God's story has to say about being God's people. In the Old Testament, as we're going to do this fall, as Jesus enters the picture, as we'll do with Advent, in the Gospels, as we'll do after Christmas, and as we engage the Holy Spirit and the call to be the church, as we'll do in spring. It means we'll learn in Sunday school about how God's story was lived out and passed on to us by some of our most important spiritual ancestors, the Anabaptists. It means we'll all gather together for two visioning weekends in January and March, where we'll pray, share, and go through a process of congregational visioning together, asking, how is God calling us to live as God's people right here, right now, and in the years to come? And to get this year started, to set the stage for what's to come this fall, our worship is going to focus on what it means to be people who follow the ancient fire. We're going to explore what it might have meant to God's first people to follow God. We're going to ask, who is the God that God's first people met in those ancient times, and what might that God have to say to us about being God's people now? And that doesn't mean we're going to only talk about fire this fall, or only moments in the Old Testament where God appears as light or fire, but I think the fire image is a particularly good one to start with, because it reminds us that at the heart of everything is God's burning desire for us. It can catch us by surprise and demand our attention in the wilderness. It can lead us when we feel like we're stuck in captivity, wandering in our own deserts, or lost in a collective dark night. It invites us to sit near its warmth in a posture of awe and wonder. And it sets us ablaze with the kind of confidence that can confront fears and wonder, that can imagine miracles. Like Moses in front of the burning bush, it calls us to take off our shoes and listen patiently, to adopt a posture of reverential worship, and to stop everything to practice our spiritual disciplines. It calls us out of our dry and desolate corners and sends us back towards our people, to one another. It reminds us that its essence is one of love and confronting oppressive powers and setting people free. And while it is patient with our complaining about not being ready or not having the right words or the challenges being too hard, it ultimately says, move forward anyway. As you do, there will be signs and miracles that show you you're on the right track. So, each Sunday through fall, I'd like this candle here to remind us that being God's people is something that connects us back to God, to an ancient fire that reminds us that God burns with desire for us, that we must always be ready to have God surprise us and grab our attention, that leads us out of the wilderness and out of anything we're held captive by, that invites us to sit by its warmth in awe and wonder so that we might dream big, and sets us ablaze with the courage to confront fears and imagine miracles. And crucial to all of this will be a reminder that like God's fire called Moses to leave the loneliness of his dry and desolate hiding place in order to return to his people, God's ancient fire continues to call us together. It's a call that we all and you all before even I have arrived have been listening to some time. But it's a call that keeps driving us closer together. So in just a few moments, we're going to take communion, which is a reminder that we are bound together to God and to one another as God's people. And when you do so, if you're able, I'd like you to file by this table with the candles on it. On that table are unlit tea light candles. I'd like each of us to take one of these and to take it home today. And then, after taking communion, I'd like you to put it, when you go home, I'd like you to put it somewhere in your house where you pray, as you or your family's personal reminders to pray for our congregation through the fall. Consider lighting it when you use it, or just handling it, passing it around the table if you do it at mealtime together. But whatever you do, use this to remember to pray for your brothers and sisters here, and that we would look for God's light to lead us. Pray that we'd be filled with awe and wonder. Pray that we would confront fears in healthy ways and imagine miracles. Pray that we would take leaps of faith, trusting that we'll see signs of God's blessing as we go, and then even if we fail big at some moments, God will ultimately get us back on track. Pray that we would deepen our ability to pray throughout the year. Pray about any hard questions or disagreements that you worry could threaten our unity. Pray for those you find the hardest to be church with some days. Pray for those that your heart spills over with joy to see. Pray for those who you suspect might be going a little unnoticed lately. Pray for those who are part of us but can't be here every Sunday. Pray that we would turn towards each other and be further knit together as the body of Christ. To help with this as well, I've put an insert, it's blue, in the bulletin that gives you some ideas for praying at home this week. Each Sunday this fall, maybe even this year, we'll see how this goes. I'll put a new insert in the bulletin that gives you new prompts for praying for our congregation. This one is just one intended to get you and your family started. So, to review. I'm going to begin communion soon, and that when that begins, you're invited to do the following. Come forward, take a tea light off this table, proceed to one of the two communion tables, or stations, take communion, and then when the service is over, take your tea lights home and place it where you or your family regularly prays. And when your family goes to pray in that spot, light this or pass it around as your reminder to pray for your Albany Mennonite Church family. pray for our Albany Mennonite Church family and for us to deepen our faithfulness in living as God's people. To pray whatever's on your heart. Use the bulletin insert if it helps you. Ignore it if it doesn't help you. Pray what's on your heart.